As the skeleton crew guided the weather-beaten Victoria to its mooring in Seville, Elcano employed his considerable skills of persuasion in a letter to King Charles to boast of the voyage's multifaceted accomplishments and to justify his assumption of command after Magellan's death. The first account of the first journey around the world, Elcano's letter was dispatched from Sanlúcar de Barrameda even before the ship reached Seville, an indication of Elcano's eagerness to offer explanations. But his letter did little to clear up the mystery of how Magellan died. Nor did Elcano explain how he, a Basque mariner, emerged as the fleet's captain general. And any connection between the two events, Magellan's fall and Elcano's rise, was similarly obscured. The letter concealed more than it revealed. Many serious questions loomed concerning the voyage. Mutinies, the sailors' licentious behavior, and outright orgies with women in distant lands, which had been expressly forbidden by the king, and, most important of all, Magellan's conduct at sea and accusations of torture. King Charles never mourned the loss of the captain general, even though Magellan had always regarded the young sovereign as the paragon of all virtues, the recipient of all his loyalties and efforts, the justification of all his suffering. Charles felt no sense of kinship with the ardent Portuguese mariner who had presented himself at Valladolid 4 years earlier, pleading for royal backing for an expedition. The Armada's many scientific and geographic discoveries and the claiming of dozens of islands and lands for Spain made little impression on this preoccupied sovereign, who, through lifelong habit, merely considered such tributes his due. Eventually, King Charles took to boasting about the expedition because it had returned with a shipload of clothes, the aromatic equivalent of gold. King Charles summoned Elcano and two men of his choosing to visit the royal residence at Valladolid to provide a full account of their exploits. Elcano selected the pilot, Albo, and the barber medic, Bustamente, to back up his account. Significantly, he excluded Pigafetta, whom he knew to be a Magellan loyalist. As a sign of royal favor, Elcano's delegation received a lavish disbursement for formal clothes and traveling expenses to Valladolid. They could be assured of making an impressive appearance before their sovereign. Charles received the three world travelers on October 18th with apparent warmth and congratulated them on having reached the Spice Islands through a water route and claiming them for Spain. Keenly aware of what was expected, Elcano solemnly presented His Majesty with samples of the spices brought back from the Moluccas, as well as letters from the island chieftain swearing loyalty to the unknown ruler of the distant land. All that was very impressive, but just for show. Clouds of suspected disloyalty, even mutiny, hung over the survivors' heads. Just before their arrival in Valladolid, disquieting rumors had reached King Charles. It was whispered that Magellan had not been killed by warriors on Mactan, but by members of the fleet. Could Elcano have been among them? And there were conflicting accounts of the bitter mutiny at Port St. Julian, some blaming the Spanish officers for the uprising, and others holding the Portuguese contingent responsible. To get to the bottom of these stories, the three men, Elcano, Albo, and Bustamente, faced an inquiry conducted by Valladolid's mayor, acting on orders from King Charles himself. The proceeding, which began on October 18th, consisted of 13 questions put to the men. The questions concentrated on two themes, the mutiny and the commercial aspects of the voyage. Elcano had given considerable thought to the charge of disloyalty that he was bound to face, and during his examination, he carefully explained his way out of the mutinies that had occurred on the ships by condemning Magellan. Elcano rearranged events to make it sound as though he had been invited by the Spanish captains to serve as the captain general, that Magellan had favored his relatives on board the ships at the expense of all others, especially the Spanish captains, and that Magellan had defied the king's explicit orders. By portraying himself as a humble defender of Spanish honor, Elcano skillfully played up to King Charles, but he was less successful in his defense of the expedition's commercial aspects. Why, his inquisitors demanded, were there only 524 quintals of clothes on board Victoria when she tied up at the quay in Seville? But the ship's own register clearly showed that she had taken on no less than 600 quintals in the Spice Islands. In his response, Elcano carefully explained that he relied on the weight given by the islanders from whom he had purchased the cloves, that he personally supervised weighing the cargo in Seville, and that any discrepancy could be accounted for by drying during the long voyage home. Next, Elcano was asked why he had failed to keep accounts. Again, the Basque-born mariner tried to shift the blame to Magellan, claiming that as long as Magellan was alive, he had written nothing because he dared not do so, in his own words, while after Magellan's death, he did record transactions. This explanation made no sense because Magellan was scrupulous about recording the fleet's activities, whether in Pigafetta's diary or in Albo's pilot's log. Ignoring those inconvenient pieces of evidence, Elcano instead spoke grandly and vaguely about Magellan's disservice to the king and the fleet, which he recklessly abandoned to its fate. His indictment of Magellan was as damning as it was unsupported by the events. Finally, Elcano was forced to confront the disquieting rumors surrounding Magellan's death. In his brief reply, Elcano held the Mactanese Islanders completely responsible. By burning their hamlet, Elcano implied, Magellan had goaded them into taking revenge. His explanation went unchallenged and served as the basis of the official determination of the cause of Magellan's death. Elcano's testimony was sufficiently dexterous to exculpate himself from royal disfavor or worse, and his two companions, giving answers remarkably similar to Elcano's, achieved the same result. By the time the inquiry ended, King Charles and his advisers were reminded that the survivors had brought them a fortune in spices, a claim to the Spice Islands themselves, a new water route to the islands, and an unequaled mastery of the ocean, all of it priceless, no matter how underhanded they had been in getting it. In the end, King Charles waived the royal duties on the spices the men brought home for their personal enrichment and offered a quarter of his own proceeds from the voyage to the three survivors who had testified in Valladolid. Elcano's bonus included even more, an annual pension of 500 ducats, a knighthood, and a coat of arms befitting the mariner who had sailed around the world. It depicted a castle, spices, two Malay kings, a globe, and the legend, "Thou first circled me." Of equal importance, Elcano received a royal pardon for his role in the failed mutiny against Magellan's command. Elcano insisted on having the document published, making his exoneration complete. He would now be qualified to lead future expeditions for Castile. The other survivors of the expedition received similar marks of royal favor. Martin Mendez, Victoria's accountant, Hernando Bustamante, the barber, Miguel de Rodas, the master of Victoria, and Espinosa each received individualized coats of arms commemorating their accomplishments. Meanwhile, the coat of arms for the Magellan family remained defaced and dishonored, as it had been since Magellan left Portugal to serve the King of Spain, the king who had all but forgotten him now. The men who had mutinied against Magellan, an entire ship filled with them, were freed from prison and absolved of their crimes. Alvaro de Mesquita, who had served as captain of San Antonio until the mutineers overwhelmed him, had languished in jail ever since 1521, when his ship returned to Seville. With Victoria's survivors corroborating his story, the die-hard Magellan loyalist was also freed in a general amnesty designed to end lingering controversy about the voyage. Having had enough of Spanish justice, he fled home to Portugal.